Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayer.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we're joined by other comics fans for some lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. We have a roundtable episode about the Long Beach Comics Expo and the Wizard Anaheim Comic Con that both took place on consecutive weekends in April of 2011. Joining me to talk about both cons is Andy Sanford, also known as LA Rabbit on the forums. Thanks for joining me, Andy.
Thanks for inviting me, Bob.
And you were at both of those cons. Let's get the general impressions. Since Long Beach happened the first weekend, and that was only a one-day show. It just happened the one-day Saturday. What were your thoughts about Long Beach in general?
Well, my wife and I, it was our first Long Beach Expo. I had first learned about Long Beach through your web posting when you did your summary from the original Long Beach Expo. So I didn't really know what to expect. I'd been to the full three-day con, but this was my first time at the one-day expo. And I thought it was pretty good for one day. I mean, it was definitely a small floor, but I liked that they had two rooms of panels, and there was lots of, you know, comic panels, and some of these Southern California ones you don't always get. You have a lot of Hollywood stuff. So, you know, they had a Top Cow did a panel, Aspirin had a panel. So I thought all in all, for a one-day con, there was a fair amount there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the one thing that the Long Beach, both the Comic Con that's longer in October and the one-day expo in April, they excel at a really good quality comics-oriented show. It is very much a comic-oriented as opposed to celebrity-oriented. You know, it is much smaller than some of the other shows that happen. That's good, and it's maybe not so good other times. I think that the selection that they had, you know, the Artist Alley was pretty good. You had a lot of good creators there. We had some really good back issue dealers, I thought, there.
Yeah, it's interesting because you get to see the same crowd, but there's always, I know at least I, and I think you did, got some really good things out of the 50-cent bin that Golden Apple had.
So Golden Apple had an excellent 50-cent bin, and they're going to be provoking me because of that to be going to Golden Apple on Free Comic Book Day, because they'll have even more 50-cent comics.
They have a lot of events and things, but I've always found their advertising to, I usually find out about it 2 weeks too late. But Long Beach, what was interesting was having Long Beach and Anaheim so close together is you saw a lot of the same creators and Artist Alley. But like I said, for me, I went to two panels in one day at Long Beach, and I saw one panel in 2 days at Anaheim to give you a feel for how much more I thought the panels were for things I was more interested in.
Yeah. Now, just, you know, top level of the Wizard Show, then, you know, for me, the Wizard Show, they really ramped up their Artist Alley section of the con. It was a very decent-sized room, and they had a huge Artist Alley. You know, there were a couple of repeat people from Long Beach, but, I mean, they were dwarfed by the huge number of other people in the Artist Alley there. And there was all the Hollywood people, too, which was fine, you know, because I think that the Wizard Show, it's kind of like a pop culture kind of thing. So you have the Hollywood stuff and you have the comic book stuff, and people can come for either or they can come for both. In previous years, the Hollywood stuff far outweighed the comic book content. And, you know, on that front, I think they really stepped up their game this year. Now, where they could still do some improvement is by adding some additional comics programming that's not of the sort of, you know, here's how to break into comics kind of panels. I would have liked, because they didn't really have the publishers at the Wizard one. You know, we had Top Cow and Aspen coming and doing their panels at the Long Beach one, and maybe they just didn't want to do it two weekends in a row, you know, so close together. But we didn't have that at the WizardCon, and I just like to see more general comics panels. But you know, I can't say enough about how phenomenal all the creators, writers, and artists that they had at the show was just amazing, amazing.
I second that. It felt like it's maybe moving from being less of a regional show. Last year, because they went against C2E2, it was almost exclusively Southern California people, you know, which has some nice names, you know, Bernie Wrightson, Gabe Hardman, but you weren't really getting anybody that wasn't directly in the area coming to it. Where this time, I know Ethan Van Sciver, I think that's how you say
right.
It, he was there. You know, there were some people that weren't just locals showing up to the con, which made it feel bigger. And I also like that it still has a bit of a regional feel because there's a gaming section. I didn't go into it, but I liked walking by and seeing it. And at your bigger shows, the gaming is so large, it's in its own separate area. And they had a little podcast section with four or five podcast booths. So it gave you kind of a sampling. And I also enjoy looking at the, you know, the Star Wars stuff and the 501st Legion and those people. So it felt like it was a nice mix while it had the comic artists right there. The panels, as you say, were mostly Hollywood and break into the business stuff, but I'm going to give them a pass on that. I also wonder if having WonderCon, I know which you attended, so close by, some of those smaller publishers just felt that they were running out of, you know, they only have so many announcements and they probably want to save them for San Diego, which I don't understand. I'd want to release them before San Diego because I think they'd get lost in the noise. But
well, you know, and I think this applies equally to the Wizard and the Long Beach show. I mean, I don't necessarily need the comics companies doing panels, but, you know, like they had the Wizard, they had the Ethan Van Sciver panel, you know, where he went up. And Ethan Van Sciver, I don't know, a lot of people know, if you follow him on Facebook, he's always, like, sitting down with his little keyboard and making up these songs and singing songs and stuff. And he had a panel where, you know, he's just very chatty, talking about all kinds of crazy stuff with the audience and also singing songs in the panel. So, you know, that's one extreme. But, I mean, they had lots of artists there that I would have loved to see Bernie Wrightson, you know, going up and having someone MC that and, you know, ask Bernie about his, you know, experiences and maybe, you know, putting up a slideshow or something of, you know, Bernie Wrightson art. And the same thing, you know, they had Kevin Maguire there. They had Paul Gulacy there. Now, Paul Gulacy did have a panel, but it was more of a breaking into comics type of panel. And, you know, that's another one. I mean, this happens at a lot of the smaller cons where they have a big focus on breaking into the business type of panels. And, you know, it's great for people who want to break into the business, you know, more power to them. But I would hope that the audience of a con is not just people wanting to break into comics, but, you know, people who are actually going to be consumers of comics. You know, you need more consumers than producers in general when something doesn't cost, you know, $1 million a piece or something. You know, these are even at $4 a piece, you absolutely need to have more consumers than producers of the work.
And I can understand the focus, but the other thing that I don't understand is how, what, you know, we've all sat through those panels, whether on purpose or inadvertently, and they all kind of say the same thing. You know, you have to work really hard at your craft and get it in front of people and take chance. You know, there's no, and I appreciate it's marketing, but it seems like a lot of people are looking for some magic bullet, and none of these people are going to be able to tell you, oh, yes, you just, you know, turn this magic key.
Well, the magic key is like, well, I was friends with this, you know, person over here and they got me a break, you know. But, you know, beyond that, like you said, I mean, you become an intern, you work really hard, or you're like just a really damn good artist, for instance, you know, like you look at some of these guys who break in and their debut work just, you know, blows people away. It's just so high quality. It's not that astounding that these people break into the business. You know, it's just work on your craft. But, you know, like I said, I would love, like, you know, Judd Winnick was there. Well, I mean, Judd Winnick and Kevin Maguire were there. So, you know, hey, they could talk about something. You know, you could have Bernie Wrightson talking about something. Jeff Parker and Gabe Hardman were there. They could have gone up and talked about the Hulk. They could have talked about Agents of Atlas, you know, or even some of the more independent guys. You know, they had several people there who were putting out creator-owned image books. You know, they could have had a panel, you know, like if I was giving input, you know, and with Jerry Milani, PR guy for Wizard, you know, I will give you a consultation for free for your LA Con panel. Show me your guest list and I'll help you come up with some comics panels that should appeal to fans of comics. You know, we had Mike Grell there. You know, heck, get him up there talking about his long career. Bill Sienkiewicz was there. You know, boy, there was such an amazing array of talent. Mike McCone was there. Arthur Soydam was there. Mark Teixeira. You know, I think I said Paul Galassi. They had a phenomenal array of comic talent, both really strong, long-time industry professionals as well as new people, up-and-comers. And, you know, just having some of these guys there talking about comics in addition to, you know, the tracks that are, you know, which were entertaining. I mean, I went to the one panel that was like a Batman TV show reunion. So they had Adam West, Burt Ward, Julie Newmar, and Lee Merriweather on the panel. And it was kind of cool seeing these actors who were in the 60s Batman TV show all in the same place at the same time, you know, and hearing them talk. You know, and I think that's something that the general public can relate to some extent. But, you know, I like that, but I was around in the 60s. You know, it's like it mystifies me why they've never put that show out on DVD. But it seems like each year there's less and less people that remember the Batman TV show because, you know, it's not on TV all the time and it's, you know, it's not on DVD or anything. But, you know, getting some of these guys out, you know, they could have panels about web comics. There were guys there who had done web comics before. They could have panels about, you know, breaking into comics, you know, people, you know, not like a how-to, but more of a, you know, just talking about their comic and their experience, which kind of is a how-to, but it's just, you can serve a dual purpose, right? By, you know, kind of, I'd be interested in just listening to the story of how, you know, Ethan Nicole actually, you know, did that web, you know, he did that Axe Cop thing with his 7-year-old brother.
And they were there. Like, yeah,
they were there. I mean, his little brother wasn't there, but Ethan was there. Little brother probably at school or something, you know, but, you know, Ethan was there. Just like they started that out as a webcomic and it like caught on. It like kind of went viral or something. And then a Dark Horse picked it up. You know, they printed a trade paperback of a lot of the web strips and now they're doing a mini series of new material. You know, that's pretty cool, you know, to be able to, you know, put something like that out. And, you know, there's lots of examples of that among the people that were there.
And it seems like that might even be a better way for a lot of people to make it. I know we've seen the brothers that do Reed Gunther go to a lot of these, and those are, my wife and I love they're really nice guys, and they're really, and we've picked up the comics at earlier cons and everything. And there's a great story about two brothers that put out these comics on their own, and now they're picked up by Image. And the writer, who is Jake Ellis, he was there.
Yes.
And there were just all these people that, it's not just, you know, the Marvel DC route, because I know, I'm pretty sure, for instance, like Marvel doesn't even want to look at writers unless you've been published, so.
Right, and that's the thing, though. Marvel is not shy about poaching people from You know, that, like, almost like Image is almost like a development shop for Marvel Comics or something. You know, you get these guys that, you know, put out this really cool creator-owned stuff that hardly anybody buys because, you know, the shops don't stock it, you know, very well. And then they get all kinds of critical acclaim, and then Marvel will hire them, and they go work on, you know, their books. You know, you like Jonathan Hickman, they did Rick Remender, Matt Fraction, you know, Brian Bendis, hell, their biggest guy, Brian Bendis, that guy, he started out doing, you know, Jinx and Torso and, you know, Powers was originally an Image book, but even before Powers, I mean, he did lots of really indie, that he drew himself, books, not necessarily even for Image. I don't remember who the original publishers a lot of that stuff were, but they were very small publishing houses. He did a lot of his own stuff, and then, you know, he worked on his craft. He did, like, Sam and Twitch for a while, you know, and then Marvel picked him up. The guy is the biggest name at Marvel, and all the people who love Marvel, you know, tens of thousands of people just worship at the altar of Brian Michael Bendis. And that guy started out doing indie comics, you know. Just try out these indie comics because there's a lot of talent out there. You know, and that's the cool part about these cons, because you got the people who have made it, and then you got the up and comers there too. And it's just so fun to be able to talk to both of them. Another really cool thing about, you know, something like both the Long Beach and the Wizard Con, since they are, you know, they're not San Diego, you know, they're much smaller conventions, is it's real easy to walk up and talk to some of these creators. I mean, you know, I walked up, I had a long conversation with Judd Winnick. I had a long conversation with Kevin Maguire, and I got to actually watch Maguire was drawing one of the pages. He was inking a page from Weird Worlds, the Tonga story in Weird Worlds number 6. That's not, you know, going to be out for a couple of months. And yeah. I was watching him. You know, he's doing all that. I didn't realize all those little lines on Tonga's uniform or her bodysuit, whatever. He hand draws all those. I thought there was some kind of Zip-a-tone or, you know, effect he was adding in. He draws all those things in by hand. It was amazing watching him do it. He, like, you know, let me, you know, look at the page. You know, he kind of flipped it around and let me look at it up close. And, you know, Bernie Wrightson was there, had a nice conversation with him. Mike Grell, Bill Sienkiewicz, Jeff Parker, and Gabe Hardman. You know, just so many people. And then, you know, lots of the new guys too, and it's fun talking to the new guys and hearing about what they're putting together.
Well, you also get to see them progress, and it was interesting. I was looking at the gentleman whose name eludes me, who was inking the Annihilator series, and I was looking at one page thinking about buying it, and he informed me he couldn't sell it yet because the book hadn't come out yet. So he had a preview of some, really, you know, that's a book I'm really enjoying, and he had the pages there finished that you can browse through at your leisure. And there was, as you say, there's almost very little wait. I mean, maybe there might be one person or two people, but if you just come back or wait in line, and everyone was very friendly that I talked to.
Except for that one guy who was monopolizing Paul Gulacy for about an hour. He wanted to go up to him.
Yes, but then I still got my thing signed, but yeah, I went, got my book signed while he was still talking, and then every time I'd turn around every 10 minutes, the guy was still there. So, but, I mean, you know, these people mean a lot to certain people.
I think it was Victor Olazaba. I'm looking it up. But Timothy Green, oh, it was either him, because he was there. He's the inker on the upfront Annihilator story, but then Timothy Green was also there, who's doing the Rocket Raccoon and Groot backup, or co-feature, I guess, because they're both about as long as each other.
Yes,
and but both those guys were right there.
And Timothy Green actually was the one that pointed me out that Victor was the anchor. And he also gave my wife a free comic book when we were having some books signed by him. So he was very nice and just very excited to see people. A lot of these younger creators in the business, it is fun, and they get to, you get to see them progress as well, because some of the really small guys, I was seeing them and I was buying their new issue that had just come out, and it's just kind of fun to, you know, say, hey, I remember you from a year ago, how's it going, what's the latest with your book, you know, is it out yet, no, it'll be out in a month. That type of exchange is a lot of fun for me anyways.
Yeah, and you know, getting, you know, from the artists, getting some of the sketch covers, you know, there were some really cool, you can look on the forum, in the Long Beach thread, I posted up some of the sketch covers I got at Long Beach, and then in the Anaheim thread, Andy and I have both posted the sketch covers that we got there. We both got some pretty nice sketch covers, I thought.
And certainly for mine, all of those were very reasonable. I mean, I don't think I paid more than $40 for anything.
Yeah, at Anaheim, I don't think I did either. I think the most expensive sketch cover I got was, yeah, I think about, in fact, I don't think I paid more than, I think I didn't pay more than like $30 for any of the sketch covers
and
that I got there.
And some of these things are just, at least for me personally, just take my breath away. I wish I could have taken better photos, but the Scarlet Witch, the Tony Fleece one, that thing looks amazing in real life.
Yeah, I might have paid. How much was Tony charging? Whatever he paid, charged, was he like 35 or something?
I think he was like 30 or 35 because I was debating going color, but the rest of mine weren't in color. So
I got X-23 from him. But, you know, I got a Tone Rodriguez, I got Ray Anthony Height, who was also at the Long Beach show. And then that guy that, Dan Smith, who we found, who was doing he was doing the full wraparound cover on these things for $30.
And that included
the great
comic.
Job. Yeah. And included the comic. He had a big pile of the sketch cover comics. He's like, oh, yeah. You know, it's like, that guy was great. And he just like did nice, you know, did some like good humor that he put into him too. So,
well, I got my martial law sketch that's posted there is from him as well. It was kind of funny because he was, he had some martial law stuff, so I got the martial law sketch, and he was talking with one of the other guys that I'd gotten a martial law sketch from last year, and he's like, oh yeah, the gentleman, his name eludes me, he did the Cylon. That guy, that creator.
Oh, yeah.
That guy remembered me from getting the martial law. And I also buy his books, the noir books.
Jesse Mesa Tovis.
Yeah,
his name.
He's got the new issue just came out, so I'm reading his book. But I had gotten a sketch from him at Long Beach before. But just kind of fun to, like I said, watch these guys develop and follow their projects. And they're really generally appreciative and very flexible. Like, if you have any thing you want drawn or anything, you can have it custom made for next to nothing.
Yeah, well, within reason. I know that was like, it's funny because there was some guy, and I don't know if you're listening, I'm not meaning to offend or anything, but it was like, he was, when I was getting my Mike McCone sketch cover in Long Beach, this guy came up and he had this very specific request. Remember the Atlanta, I don't know if you remember the Atlantis Attacks crossover that happened in Marvel back in the 90s.
Didn't the omnibus for that just come out?
Yeah, it was in the annuals. Anyway, his he wanted a Atuma and Jean Grey, but he wanted them the way they looked in this one issue of the Atlantis Attacks thing. So Jean Grey's in some kind of underwater bikini with like clamshells, you know, for the bra, and Atuma, you know, has like really short hair and a loincloth. He didn't have his like big cool helmet and the big sword and all that kind of stuff, but he wanted like, and he was having these poses, and he wanted this very specific, and he had the reference and everything. But, you know, I was over, like, Ethan Van Sciver, and he had asked Ethan Van Sciver for one, and he, like, wanted Jean in that outfit, but he wanted her to be, like, really pregnant, and like Atuma standing next to her, standing behind her or something. And he's like, oh, maybe. And he's like, I'm not going to do this. You know, I called my wife and she told me, don't do it. You know, so you have these conversations with these guys, and it's just, it was really funny that, you know, but it's kind of funny that the, what people will ask for as a custom sketch, you know. But Ethan was doing this Joker commission, and it was just, you know, it's not something that he was just having fun with it, but Joker's like laying on his back, and you know how like somebody in the circus will like juggle a beach ball on their feet while they're right. laying on their back? Well, he was juggling a dead baby. So it's good to know that Ethan will not draw the line at that, but he won't draw a pregnant Jean Grey, so...
Well, I'm sure you could have found someone in that. There were a lot of people in the Artist Alley. I bet you someone would have drawn the pregnant Jean Grey in the clamshell.
Yeah, indeed. But, you know...
But I thought it was a great... lots of fun. I unfortunately only got to go Saturday and Sunday, so I didn't... And with the problem with having a three-day con, and I don't know if this would be remedied by a two-day con, we're going to learn with the new one in, they announced in L.A. this year. A lot of people defected on Sunday, so I was hoping to... The one young lady that we both got the Spider-Man commission from, her and her husband, who I also got the Jean Grey, were gone on Sunday, and I was kind of hoping they were going to be there because I was going to have her do one of those color pieces for me. But
right.
they didn't come back, and I noticed Gabe. So it was weird to see the rapid attrition of people. I mean, it was still a nice – I'm glad I went Sunday, and I got a lot of great pieces on Sunday. But it was kind of like, oh, I wish more of the people. And I was speaking with a few of the the people working, and they had said, I guess it was some confusion – on Wizards communication, one of the artists was telling me, and so a lot of people weren't sure about table reservations and everything, so there were some mix-up, at least that was his story, as to why some of the people weren't there on Sunday.
I think a lot of people, you know, if they've got traveling to do, don't stay the whole day on Sunday, you know. They like to, you know, kind of close up early, but they usually be there at least for the first couple of hours, but, you know, I think that maybe after, and this isn't anything against Wizard, you know, it's just the Anaheim location, in my opinion, is a terrible location for a con.
I agree with you.
And, you know, it's like, I heard people talking, you know, they're like, oh yeah, you know, they're talking about San Diego moving here. It's like, it seems like every time that the San Diego, you know, con committee needs to renew their contract with the San Diego Convention Center, they like must start some rumors about moving to Anaheim or Los Angeles or Las Vegas or something as a negotiation tactic to put the fear of God into San Diego, you know, because they don't want to lose having 150,000 people swarm into San Diego blowing all kinds of money, you know. And, you know, the Anaheim Convention Center is physically, if you use the whole convention center, because I went out and looked at their website, they actually do have more square footage than San Diego. So if they took over the whole convention center, they'd have more room. However, it's right across the street from Disneyland. You know, it's just, there's not enough parking. You know, the hotels are full of people going to Disneyland, and if you did it in July when San Diego is, boy, it would be ridiculous to get to this convention center.
And you're not joking. When you walk out of the convention, you can see the back side, the ugly side of, you know, the attractions that stand up high. You can, it's literally on the back side.
Yeah, it's right across the street.
The other thing I don't like is the Anaheim is really only serviced by the 5 to get a little of the traffic situation. I'll be curious to see. They used to do some conventions in L.A., and they're having the other one. And the traffic is horrible in L.A., but at least you have the 5, the 10, the 101, the 110. Like, there's some different feeds into there. Where if you're going to Anaheim, you're pretty much taking the 5. I mean, maybe there's some secret route through the 60 or something that I don't know about, but it's an awful lot of funneling of traffic through that section when you already have Disneyland, because you take the Disneyland exit and you drive right by Disney, you know, all the parking lots and everything, if you're taking the 5 at least, southbound. So it really is like you'd be right in the thick with all the Disneyland people, because that's how they get off the freeway too. Yeah. So it's not only that you're right across the street, it's the same exit and the same route that you take.
Yeah. Well, I think for a smaller show, it's doable. You know, for this show, it wasn't that bad.
Well,
but
they only had
putting San Diego into that convention center, that would be a huge disaster.
Because they had just the Hall A anyway. I mean, it was a I mean, it was a good size, but it wasn't anything like there are 5 different halls and they had one of them. So it clearly was not filled to the capacity. Like San Diego clearly would overwhelm the place. I don't see them. It's also not that great. Right outside, there isn't that many amenities. They're not that far away, but it's not. In San Diego, I feel like I can get out and I can walk. I mean, it's going to be jam crowded, but there's all those restaurants across the street.
Yeah, it's a little nicer now. I mean, like 10 years ago in San Diego, there was really no place to go outside the convention center. You know, now you can kind of go across the street there, and there's all the hotels right there that have some nice places to eat in them, and, you know, hotel bars that are pretty nice. You really don't have that around the Anaheim Convention Center as much. I mean, there are a couple of bigger hotels, but, you know, it's just a little more limited. And anywhere you go, you're competing for space with, you know, the, you know, 50 or 60,000 people who are in Disneyland on a, you know, on a summer Saturday. You know, that place is jam-packed on the weekends.
And that's just if they don't get lucky, because the other thing, as you know from when you go to Disneyland, and as I know, my wife likes to plan these out, is Disneyland also has special events. So if it happened that Comic-Con fell at the same week that there's some, I mean, it's bad in the summer, but there are some days you don't want to go. I've actually been to Disneyland when they stopped selling tickets and got so crowded. Let me tell you, that's a lot of people. So there are days when you just get that, and Disney's not going to change their programming to suit a comic book convention. You know what I mean? They're going to...
Oh, absolutely not. They are the 500-pound gorilla. What was actually interesting to me was, you know, there were no Disney comics, really. You know, it just seems like the one piece of that convention that wasn't there, you know, because you had the Hollywood piece and you had the, you know, comic piece. There was no Disney-ana, you know, kind of thing. You know, all these Disney collectors and stuff.
Well, there's a D23 convention coming up in a couple of months. D23 is this special Disney fan club thing. So I think the Disney people tend to segregate themselves.
Yeah.
Because they have so much. I mean, they have.
Well, I'm not saying the Disney themselves, but, you know, some of the dealers who specialize in that stuff. It seems like being right across the street from Disneyland, you know, if somebody had a booth with, you know, lots of Disney junk to sell, that you might have sold some of it.
Well, you saw that nice Uncle Scrooge original simulated piece of art. What was that, $600 for that? Nice.
Well, actually, that was Pat Block is a renowned Disney artist, but boy, he had just original pieces, and they were beautiful, but they were way out of the price range. You know, that's the kind of thing that maybe at a Disney-oriented thing might have sold. I think you should have had some stuff that was a little cheaper.
I think some nice, high-quality prints for even... I saw prints going anywhere from $5 to $20 at other people's booths that were...
Well, even snapping out, like, a head sketch of Donald Duck. I mean, I've seen, like, these guys, like Don Rosa, who I've seen at the Phoenix Con. You know, he can snap out a Uncle Scrooge or Donald Duck head sketch and, you know... 5 minutes, you know, tops. I mean, there's not a lot, you know, you don't put a lot of shading or anything onto these things, you know. It's, you know, you can do them pretty quick. I mean, you know, heck, do head sketches of the ducks for $10. I would have bought one, you know?
Yeah, and you certainly, it was, I have noticed that the sketch card business seems to be brisk. The we saw Tom Hodges at both Long Beach and there, and he was doing the Star Wars little sketch cards, and he was like a machine. I mean, the demand for those things, because they're five.
He was doing little heads. He was doing little head sketches both at WonderCon and this one for $10, And he had like a big pile of them that he, you know, did beforehand. You could like look through his notebook and either take one of those or make a unique request. And, you know, he'd do anybody's head for $10.
And it looked like he had great, I mean, people were, every time I walked by, he had people buying and interested. So it seemed like it was a real smart move rather than doing a more expensive, longer piece.
Yeah, you know, there's kind of a threshold where if somebody will do something for not that much money, if you can draw it relatively quick, because, you know, Hodges is the same way. I mean, he can do a head sketch in like 5 minutes. You know, it's like, well, if I can do a head sketch in 5 minutes and I sell him for $10, you know, he can do $100 worth of sketches in an hour, you know, and have 10 satisfied customers as opposed to doing $100 sketch, you know.
And the people really, I mean, it seemed really popular also with the kids, because it's not that much, you know, you could get your kid his own original art.
Oh, yeah, you know, I'll buy my kid a $10 sketch. I'm not going to buy him a $100 sketch, right?
Exactly, but I got to say, anyone who is on the fence about this stuff should really go. I only actually got my first piece of commissioned art / sketch at last year's Long Beach over Halloween. It was the Gabe Hardman martial art I got. And that was the first time I'd ever done it. And it's, you know, these people they're generally understanding. They know that a lot of us aren't filled with the best social graces. And so they're generally quite nice and flexible and everything. And I've had a great experience so far. So it's not like I've been doing this for 30 years or anything. I mean, I've been reading comics for a long time, but I used to never go to these things were not geographically close to me, so I never got to go to anything like this.
Right. Oh, and, you know, tip for anybody wanting a sketch that's not like, you know, Batman, Green Lantern, you know, whatever, or if it's like a sketch of a character from a book that the person's currently drawing, you can pretty much get by and figure they don't need reference. You know, most people can draw Spider-Man and, you know, all the big guys. But if you want martial law, if you want Jean Grey from a specific, you know, Clamp. Seashell bikini from a specific issue, bring along reference. You know, bring reference with you to the show. Make a photocopy or bring a comic book that you can leave with the guy, and they can use that as reference when they're drawing whatever piece you want. Because they'll pretty much do anything you ask for, I mean, within reason. I mean, and there were some guys who would do anything even outside of reason, you know, that are there. You can kind of look through their existing things and see how open they are to crazy stuff. But
and you can also plumb, there's always 50 cent quarter boxes. So if your character's not super obscure, you can also just rummage through those boxes, grab a cheap book out of it. It's 50 cents. I mean, it doesn't need to be gem mint condition to give to these guys, but I've also noticed a lot of them now use their smartphones. I see that a lot. When they need reference, they just whip out the, I don't know if you noticed a lot of them working off their smartphones, which makes sense because you can get an infinite variety of images from any angle you want off of Google or insert favorite search engine here.
What other kind of stuff did you buy besides the art?
At Long Beach, I did, like I said, the Golden Apple 50 cent bin. I got the Marvel Soleil, all three of the Tales of the Dragon Guard for $1.50. So you can't, what was that, about $15 worth of comics?
Yep.
Or $1.50?
Or even more. It was like, I don't remember, it was like $4.99 or $5.99. So that was a good deal.
So that worked out well for me. I do cruise the 50% off trades, but if it's anything less than 50% off, I'm not probably going to go searching. I mean, I guess if there's some rare out-of-print book, but some of these booths, they have, you know, 25% off or whatever. You can beat that, you know, just on yearly sales here in Southern California. But there is always one large booth that does the 50% off. So I did pick up the Beast of Burden that you found. And you were like, hey, do you have this? I'm like, no, Jill Thompson, pass it here. So I got that. And they have a nice mix of like art books and books about comics. I think they just get them remaindered or something because they had this weird collection. And the guy working the booth didn't seem to be that knowledgeable about
comics. Yeah, he was not that into the, you know, the topic. You know, but they're not technically Remainder because they don't have the Remainder marks on them or anything. And I picked up from them a DC role-playing handbook, a new one, not like the old Mayfair Games one, because my son really likes role-playing games. So I got that for him. It was like a $40 book I got for $20. So
I like going, like I said, I don't do any gaming anymore, but I enjoy seeing they had all those different, like I play the Sid Meier Civilization game, and I know that came from a board game, and it was fun to see the board game there and all the different, I had forgotten that there is a real rich world of board gaming out there that you just don't ever think about.
What was that book we got from that doctor at the end of the day?
that was his a virtual reality, but it seemed like it might have also been a pitch for his, apparently he has some anti-aging drug that he has discovered / invented, and it seemed like a weird combo pitch of like my futuristic VR book and my medicine. But my favorite part was it was a nice hardcover for $10, which was, you know, it's I think 150 pages, but my favorite part was he would autograph it for $10 more.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. It was like, you know, you can get like it's a $30 hardcover, you know, and he's like selling them for $10, but $20 autographed, and it's like, well, Dr. Park, I think I will, unless you're autographing a, you know, some kind of prescription for me for something that I really need, I'm not going to pay $10 for your autograph.
Well, he was also in the he and Mike Grell were in the Hollywood section, which I found very strange.
Well, he was on the other. He wasn't technically in the Hollywood section. He was kind of on that back wall because there was some toy vendors back there too. He wasn't actually in the row, and maybe the that was guests or something, but I remember I was looking all through Artist Alley on Friday night looking for Mike Grell, and then you said, oh, yeah, I saw him because I didn't even walk through the Hollywood part. Yeah, and then he said, oh, yeah, he's over in the Hollywood section.
He was right next to Carlos, the guy from Reno 911, and he did Rocco's Modern Life as well. And I'm like, oh, there's Mike Grell. I didn't know what, like, because he also has stuff he's selling and everything. Like, he had the, you know, sketches and original artwork and things like that. So it just seemed weird. I'd never seen a comic person buried in the middle of the Hollywood Trail.
Yeah, it was strange. He was maybe the only one that I noticed over there.
I felt bad. There were two artists that were up back in the very back where all the organizations were past the podcast. There were two artists there, and I didn't know if they had made someone mad or what, but I was like, I didn't know how they got separated from the rest of Artist Alley, but it seemed like a weird position. Because in the back corner, that's where they put like the Ghostbuster cosplayers and the furries and the Pendant Audio and those sorts of places, which I like a lot, but they're kind of pushed way in the back.
Yeah, it was funny because Tone Rodriguez was back there too and on Friday night, and he's like, yeah, Barbara Kiesel has a table like right out in the heart of Artist Alley, and she's going to let me move over and share her table, you know, for Saturday. And I said, yeah, that would be a really good idea, Tone. Then sure enough, on Saturday, he was sitting next to Barbara, you know, because she's a writer, so she didn't have a whole lot of, you know, stuff to sell. And Tone had his, you know, big banner, and he had, like, you know, sketches and things like that in his art portfolio and things.
Well, I noticed on Sunday, all those people in the back had migrated down except for Pendant Audio. They were the lone one on those last two rows. Everyone else had moved into where the, like, a lot of the Hollywood celebrities leave, so they had just slid their booths into their sections. Mm-hmm. So it was fun to watch them slowly creep towards the door. But I enjoy having the cosplayers there. We ended up talking to, my wife and I talked to the people that build those R2-D2 units.
Yeah, I couldn't seem to walk up one of these aisles without like having some R2-D2 charging me. These radio-controlled full-size R2-D2s they had running around.
Apparently you can get the blueprints from that and build them yourself. This guy took almost 2 years, and those things weigh like 140 pounds. I mean, they are a substantial construction. You know, it's not a plastic shell. They're made out of real metal and plywood and all this. It's quite the construction. If you know, they take the head off and show you all the workings, and it was just kind of I thought it was interesting. I mean, that's way beyond my skills, but it's neat that there are people out there putting these things together. And I had no idea it weighed 140 pounds. He said he had to build a crane to lift it into his car.
Jeez.
But he takes it around to, you know, children's hospitals and stuff like that. So,
because there were more than one. There was one like a stealth one that was like all black, and then there was a regular one, and there was some other. I thought I saw at least three different ones.
I saw at least four, because it's a whole club, and if you join, they will give you the schematics to build your own. And one person, I guess, is building one that's going to be all bedazzled with rhinestones.
You know, I'm going to go to the trouble of building an R2-D2. I kind of wanted to look like R2-D2.
Well, this is all people building their second and third. Like, they already have the one that looks like R2. And the guy we were talking to was building just a shell that you can, like an insert, sort of drop around his R2 if you wanted to make it look different, like
Like a Spider-Man, you know, if you really want to, you know, because these guys are always at comic book conventions, like a Spider-Man paint job on it, or Captain America or something.
That
would
be a good, or maybe a little tiny Spider Slayer. That would be the thing, one of the old school ones.
Get some arms, get some Dr. Octopus arms, you know, put some crazy glasses on it.
And a picture of J. Jonah Jameson in the faceplate.
Yeah.
But I think this was a lot of fun. I kind of wish it was only Saturday and Sunday, because I think that might have beefed up people staying on Sunday. Just Friday, it was only open like 5 to 9, and in L.A. rush hour traffic, I probably would have gotten there at like 8:30.
Yeah, you know, I was there Friday night, but actually it was kind of weird, and I don't know what happened to him, but Matt Banning, who is inker on Green Lantern Corps, he was there on Friday, and, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, you know, bring stuff in and I'll autograph it, you know, because I said, oh, I didn't notice that you were going to be here. And he wasn't there on Saturday or Sunday, so something must have happened there that caused him to stay away. I think some people, because they came on, you know, a lot of the artists, if they came a little late, there was no parking. And, you know, maybe he got there and it was like no parking and said, ah, forget it, I'm going home.
I spent probably about a half hour Saturday morning just getting routed around, and I ended up parking on the exact wrong side. And as you said, the convention center is the size of San Diego, so basically I had to walk through the entire wrong side of the convention just to find the thing. So I don't blame him there. And I know Mr. Hardman was also, I think, running a little late due to the parking situation, so it's certainly understandable. There was another convention on Saturday, so all the signs were for this medical convention as opposed to the Comic-Con.
Right.
But, it was, compared to last year, in my opinion, it was a 200% better. I mean, I just wouldn't even compare. I was kind of so-so on this convention, and so I was really blown away that the Artist Alley was it was actually a real Artist Alley and not just the same 10 people I saw the weekend before.
It was impressive. I mean, I would say that the Artist Alley was at least comparable to WonderCon, if not slightly better. You know, it was a very impressive Artist Alley that they had at this con. And, you know, local people, you know, give it a shot if you like that kind of thing for a convention. If you like being able to talk to the creators of the con, the Wizard Show, highly recommend it. You know, and I think, you know, especially if you're interested, you know, on the comic side, that's the primary focus for me, right? And then if you're also interested in the pop culture side, you know, you want to be able to see some celebrities like they had. You know, of course, you know, Adam West and Burt Ward, they had John Schneider and, you know, various people who've been on Battlestar Galactica and people from Stargate. I think I saw Mira Furlon there, who was Delenn, you know, and I think she's probably on Stargate also, you know. So lots of people who, you know, because you're right here in Hollywood area. I mean, it's Anaheim, but it's close enough to Hollywood that it's a short drive for people. There's lots of TV people,
yes.
That are just available to come to this thing. And, you know, if you want to meet, you know, people, they don't bring people from like a soap opera or something, but I mean, there are plenty of people that have been on sci-fi and fantasy and, you know, action type of TV shows.
They also have
lots of those people.
A small amount of professional wrestling, if you like that, and a small amount of video games. So it's really a nice mix and match of pop culture, I would say. The other thing is, I like San Diego, but I can understand how overwhelming it is. This isn't like, you can actually walk around the panels. I've never seen one of these panels fill up. Like, it's not like you're going to war sometimes, like it feels like with San Diego, where you got to lay out what you're doing ahead of time. And
that Adam West panel was pretty full.
Oh, okay. Well, I ended up going to the Guild one, which was more than half empty, so there was plenty of room. Walking around, I never felt that kind of crowded. Like, you know, sometimes it's not like you walk freely, but it's not like you're jammed in shoulder to shoulder where you're really stuck behind 16 different Chewbaccas and all these people. I mean, I like the cosplayers too, but when it gets more crowded, you know, people stopping for the photos and everything can trip you up. But this is a much more relaxed, open kind of atmosphere. So if you're all kind of claustrophobic or whatever, this would be a nice starter. If you were like, oh, I went to San Diego and I saw the lines and it just put me off, try one of these little cons that you won't have that. Just for my 2 cents. Like I said, I don't mind San Diego. I'm more than willing to stand in the lines and everything. But I also get a little weary of working that floor sometimes when you're like...
Yeah, and I can understand, you know, also San Diego as a very... If someone's never been to a con before... Going to San Diego as your very first con could really be overwhelming.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I think that, you know, easing yourself into it, if you're in Southern California, going to one of the smaller cons would probably be a really good idea before you want to take a run at San Diego.
There's just so much programming at San Diego. It's really overwhelming. I mean, you'd be lucky if you can see 5%. And there's no way you're not going to see about 20 different panels you're going to want to go to. And you just can't, you know, just like I said, logistically, you almost have to plan out, okay, I want to see this one. Then I'll see this one. Oh, I can't see that one because I can't get over in time and things like that. We're here. Most of these have one or two rooms worth of programming. There'll be a few panels you want to see, and you can get a feel for how you like it. Maybe you'll find out you don't like it, but, you know, one day pass to these things is usually $20 or in that range, so it's not like it's not like a day out at Disneyland or something. It's
right
expenses.
Yeah, I think it's $25 for a 1 day pass and maybe $40 for the whole 3 days for the Wizard one. I think the 1 day for Long Beach was, you know, $20 or $25, you know, reasonable price.
And with a lot of these, if you go and buy them online early, a lot of times you'll get, you know, $5. I think when we got our Long Beach ones, maybe it's because we went to the other one, we got a discounted pass. You know, they knocked a couple bucks off the price, that type of thing. I mean, if you're savvy on the internet, you can just look for when the deals come up and grab yourself a deal. But it's really helped invigorate my love of the comics medium as a medium. It's the best way to get exposed to all these wonderful independent comics that you're just not going to see. I live in LA, which has some of the best comic stores, I would argue, anywhere. And I'm not even going to find some of the stuff that you're going to see at a convention because they just, you know, these things are self-published or they have such short print runs or they sell out or whatever. It's a way not only to meet the creators, but just get exposed to these books that you're never going to find in your store, or you're not going to get them on, you know, I don't read previews, so that's not even an option for me, but.
Right. And that's, you know, I think that's the thing is, you know, for people who don't read previews, well, listen to our previews episode. You can.
Which I do.
Get a view. And I always put links to a lot of the online solicits too, but you know, the smaller companies, you know, that just do one or two books, you really don't get the online previews. But, you know, at a minimum, there's lots of cool stuff coming out from Image, Dynamite, IDW, and they have online solicits on every month, and I link them from the website, so you can kind of see what at least selection of stuff is coming out. But
you find out about new books because they pitch them. Like my wife heard about the new Philip Sabic from Top Cow, his new noir book that's coming out next month. She was very interested, so we're going to go buy it. And if we'd probably read that solicit, maybe we would, maybe we wouldn't. But there's something about hearing someone pitch it, seeing some of the art. Or like, you know, sometimes for me, as much as I like previews and all that, it, for my personal taste, it's a little bit too much like homework. Or if you go to these things and some guy pitches it to you and shows you, it kind of gets you excited a little bit more than just reading a 600-page book with 4,000 entries in it. But that's just my take. Like, I know a lot of people love previews, but if you're like me and, you know, you like previews, but you more want to have some kind of connection or get something.
I think it's the difference between listening to the preview episode and listening to the preview interviews, where you have just a shorter time, but you got the actual creator on a book talking about, you know, how they went into creating it and where, you know, where they came up with the idea for the book or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, I respond. I really like that. And like I said, if you're there, you meet the guys in line. And the other good thing is it's a good way to find out what you don't like, too. I mean, out of the Top Cow panel, there's one book we're very interested in, another one that maybe if I'd read in the previews, I'd think I would like. But when I saw some of the artwork and everything, it allowed me to rule it out, too. So it's it works both ways.
Probably not what they're shooting for, but it's a good point. I know that I have the same reaction because a lot of times they put online previews of a lot of books up on the web, and I love looking at the online previews, and I have the same thing. It's like sometime I'll read an online preview, and it's like, well, that's really not to my taste, so I think I'm going to skip that one, you know, and just, you know, that's the way it rolls. So,
but I'm excited for the upcoming. As we've hinted at, and I think everyone knows, Wizard has announced at the end of September, and it's also on your forums, they're bringing one back to Los Angeles. It's been a few years. They used to do one in L.A. a few years back that I went to. But the L.A. Convention Center is, for my mind, convenient to where I live and to where I work, so I'll be definitely going to that. Long Beach is, of course, over Halloween. I'm a lifetime member of that. I took advantage of that program, which I think they're still offering, which is a pretty good deal. And I also found out about this Kamikaze Expo, which is in November. I think it's their first year. That's also in Los Angeles, and I'll probably check that out too. I mean, I don't know. I haven't heard of it. They were handing out flyers there, but I like to try. Some of these little ones can be a lot of fun. I ended up at a few. Sometimes they're a little more than dealer rooms, but even then, you know, it's a chance. No,
it's good when you have a bunch of dealers, you know, because that's fun too. I do like the artists though, so you know, it's just a great addition to any con, and it's the difference between a con and a comic show, I will say.
Yes.
You know, there's lots of local comic shows, and they might have like one or two guys there who are, you know, just local artists. And, you know, they're doing autographs or doing some little sketches, and that's great. But an actual con will usually have a decent-sized artist alley where there's, you know, somewhere between 40 and I think there had to have been, I think I saw on their website, 200 comic creators at the Wizard thing, which was really impressive. You know, it's just amazing the depth and breadth of comics creators that they had signed up for the Wizard show. You know, I was able to get two kind of holy grails of my art collecting, which were, I got those two pages of Paul Gulacy original art, which again, I have pictures of on the forum thread. And I also got a Kevin Maguire head sketch, which was really great, of Guy Gardner. And Maguire was great because he knows, you know, he's known for the facial expression. So, you know, he is doing headshot commissions that just, you know, whatever character you want, and you could either specify an expression, you know, it's like, I want, you know, Black Canary to look angry or something, or, you know, you could just say, you know, your choice, and he'd kind of draw something. But he's got all the, you know, the work he puts into these things is phenomenal. So,
and a lot of them also, thanks to the internet, you can pre-order And sometimes, I mean, they do nice stuff there, but the pre-order is nice because they can spend as much time as they want. I know you did that with your Gabe Hardman sketch.
Yes.
Which came out beautiful, but I saw a lot of the people were doing that too. And that way you don't feel like you're standing over their shoulder or whatever. It's nice sometimes to, you know, they all have email and everything. You just tell them what you want and then pick it up. And I thought it was a beautiful looking piece, personally. I assume you're happy with it.
Oh, yeah, it's great. He did a Doc Savage for me, which I think is perfect for his style because he's got, like, a very noir kind of style. You know, you always see him doing, like, these flashbacks in Agents of Atlas and, you know, different books. He's doing stuff set in the 1950s and just does a great job on that stuff.
Yeah, from top to bottom, I like him, and I liked a lot of the, like I said, I tend to specialize, and I like haunting the up-and-comer types, but as you said, it's nice to see Bill Sienkiewicz. There's a guy that, you know, when I was getting into comics, he was the big thing. I remember that, like the Elektra stuff and all that. That made a real big impact on Wolverine and Havoc, and those things were, for me, you know, that's seeing someone that had a big impact on me in comics. And they're generally really nice and friendly. I mean, they got to do their panels and they got to do their thing and they're on the clock, but they're all, so far I've had nothing but good experiences.
So kind of in summation, you know, for me, big thumbs up to both these shows, both the Long Beach and the Wizard Show. If you're in the Southern California area, it's well worth your while to check these shows out. Even if you only can make it on, you know, if you're going to make it on one day, try to come on Saturday. That's the big day for any of these cons. And the other thing that I would recommend is just get there on time. You know, get there about 20, 30 minutes before the doors open, and you shouldn't have a problem parking that way.
I definitely agree. Get there. Pick one day. If it's your first one, I mean, I like getting the multi-day pass, because even if you just go two of the days, it's cheaper. But just get the Saturday pass, show up early. You know, my wife comes with me, she has fun. I'm clearly a bigger comic guy, but there's enough, you know, the kids are there a lot, they always have stuff for them. You know, it's generally a pretty fun place, I think, but I'm biased. And there's usually places to sit, or if you're into gaming or whatever, I think you'll find there's a lot there for you. And even if you just hang out a couple hours, it's a neat experience. People dressed up, you'll see this one had a lot of different famous cars, the Batmobile and the DeLorean and all that stuff, if you like that. I mean, there's a lot, race cars, you know, all kinds of things.
Oh, that's right, they had and I remember this from when I was a kid, they had the Snake and the Mongoose, like Don Prudhomme and I forget what the other guy's name was, but they had this racing car rivalry back in the 70s, I think. They're doing a documentary about them, and they had their race cars there.
Yeah, and that's something you wouldn't necessarily think for a comic, but a lot of these, they sort of moved into pop culture, which is good and bad. I mean, I like that it brings in new people, because if it gets...
It was actually cool, because I would never go... I remember that stuff from when I was younger. I would never go to, like, a car show, you know, that just had these, you know, race cars, you know. So I got to see him, and I got to talk to the guys, so it was fun.
Cool. Well, I hope people give these cons a chance. They're fun.
Yep. So, you know, just keep listening. You know, we'll mention when they have more shows, you know, at least ones that I'm going to, but... You know, you can find out about them on the forums, too, because usually people from different parts of the country will start a thread that says, you know, oh, who's going to such and such a convention, you know, that's in their neck of the woods. You know, you'll have, you know, Heroes Con or Dragon Con or Wonder Con, Boston Comic Con, C2E2. There's all kinds of cons all over the place. It seems like every month of the year, there's one or two cons, it seems.
And if you don't see a thread, I'd say start one.
Start one. Yep.
That's how I met. I mean, I was frequenter on the boards, but I met Bob by going to the Long Beach. He posted about it. I was interested, and we met at the last year's Long Beach.
Yep. And, you know, for any LA people, you know, Andy and I are both going to be at the Los Angeles one.
Yes.
So, you know, come check that one out. We'd love to you know, grab lunch or dinner or something with people, kind of hang around at the con. It's fun. Okay. I think that, you got anything else, or is that about a wrap?
That's a wrap.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.